Good morning. You're listening to KPCW. It's 8:06, and we have a chilly morning this May morning, May 8th. And on the phone, we've got Erica Martine from the ABC Forecast Center to give us an update.
You have Charlie, I think, Carolyn.
Okay. Well, let's take your report. Sorry about that.
No problem. I thought you were doing such a fine job. I was waiting to hear from Erica as well.
Yeah, we'll catch her on the back end.
I think I can make her weather report pretty easy. It's going to be absolutely gorgeous out. The last few days have been beautiful in Park City, and certainly the next coming days look like they're going to be every bit as nice. The good news is trails certainly have dried out. We do have at least one trail to add to the system today, and that's going to be Armstrong up to Johns is dried out and so forth. I took a look at it from a distance today. I have almost no doubt that you can't get to Ham without being in snow and deadfall. So for the moment, that's probably as high as we're going to get in that area, which is, of course, way earlier than is typical. So otherwise, all I'm going to say is get out there, have a great weekend, and a happy Mother's Day. And, enjoy it. It's beautiful out.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks, Carolyn.
Well, it is 8:07, and it looks like we do not have a report yet from Erica Martine from the ABC Forecast Center, hoping that she was going to call in this morning. But it is sunny, as we've been talking about. 61 degrees is the expected high today, and we're looking at sunshine all day in Park City, and then high of 64 on Saturday. And it looks like the winds will be pretty calm, and they'll be blowing about 5 to 9 miles per hour this afternoon. So it'll pick up a little bit, as it often does in the afternoons. Sunday, we're looking at a high of 71, partly sunny. It does sound like it's going to be quite beautiful. And then Monday, we are expecting a chance of thunderstorms. And then on Monday night, again, into the evening, chance of thunderstorms. Tuesday, mostly sunny with a slight chance in the afternoon, and the high on Monday will be 69. The high on Tuesday will be, looks like, 65 degrees. So stay with us for the local news hour coming up in just a few minutes here. You're listening to KPCW. It is 8:09. Well, yet another traditional event this year is going virtual because of the COVID-generated restrictions on mass gatherings. Rick Bruff reports that the Kimball Arts Center's Monster Draw Rally will be an online event next week, May 15th. Here's this.
In Bolsonaro, that's been supported by...
Rally is something that's been done nationwide for arts organizations and other nonprofits.
And it's basically a whole bunch of artists get together and they create art in real time in front of a audience. They usually have 45 to 50 minutes, and then you buy their piece for $50. And when more than one person wants the piece, it's a luck of the draw card game.
In the past, the event has drawn 300 people to the Arts Center with 50 artists on hand. This year, obviously, that can't be done. They're going online for the event on May the 15th at 8 p.m.
So you will still be able to tune in to a live art-making process. You'll still be able to, see what's going on in artist studios, build a relationship with local artists, and purchase artwork for $50. This year, though, of course, it's like I said, it's being done online. It's via Zoom. And you can also, a lot of these artists, as you know, they are certainly suffering from a lack of sales due to the COVID-19 situation. And so we have given them this year an opportunity to add some artwork at a price point of their discretion, generally a little bit higher than $50.
To access the event, go online to monsterdrawingrallypc.org. In the meantime, Robert said they haven't decided if the Kimball Art Festival will take place this summer, but they know it won't happen in the same way they've done it for 50 years. She said they've been talking with Park City's special events staffers.
We presented about four or five different options to them that would potentially allow us to have a festival, but do so within the 20 to 50 person gathering restrictions. We have a lot of different ideas, everything from a timed entry to even a drive-through festival to a virtual festival.
Amy Roberts, Communications Director for the Kimball Arts Center. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
Well, Summit and Park City officials adopted a resolution to make May a month of mental health awareness. Especially in this time of COVID-19, the uncertainty causes increased depression, anxiety, and fear. Summit County Director of Behavioral Health Aaron Newman kicked off the Coffee with Council session last week, explaining the Mental Health Alliance services available to residents. Beginning this year, the county transitioned from Valley Behavioral to the University of Utah's Healthy U Behavioral. He says it's opened up access to an extensive range of behavioral health resources.
And in doing that, we changed the way we deliver services here in Summit County. Instead of relying on one or two individual clinicians, we've brought in 97 clinicians into our network of care.
And Mary Krista Smith is the executive director of Communities That Care. Their mission is to create a culture of health and well-being for youth and families. Their coalition, she says, is made up of many community members.
Our coalition is made up of nonprofit leaders, local government officials, concerned parents and counselors throughout Summit County who serve the young people within our community, and we work together in a collaborative way so that we are supporting each other and have a cohesive approach to prevention and youth mental wellness.
The Christian Center of Park City has responded to emergency needs in the area with food and financial assistance to those who have lost their income due to COVID-19. Leah Harder, a counselor with the Christian Center, specializes in trauma, anxiety, depression, and suicide. They've got 9 therapists, with some focusing on children and play therapy, as well as teen counseling. Harder says last year they gave out $25,000 in scholarship funds to help people with therapy sessions. Through the same program, they are offering 2 free sessions for individuals through the month of May. She says the COVID-19 pandemic has made even small issues much bigger.
We have seen increased anxiety for sure. We have seen lots of loneliness, lots of isolation. We've seen relapse in addictions all over the place. A lot of depression, lots of anxiety.
Ellen Silver is with the Jewish Family Services. She explains that her organization is open to everyone, regardless of religious affiliation. She says they have a very liberal sliding scale payment program. Her focus is Alzheimer's and dementia patients, as well as their caregivers.
Most important thing is to keep as best the routine as usual as you can. That really helps to relieve anxiety for both the care recipient and the caregiver. Putting prompts around your house about washing your hands and not touching your face. And, you know, while those are things we remember internally, someone with a cognitive issue needs to be reminded of that constantly. What we're also telling people now, especially all our older adults, not just the caregivers, but folks who are stuck at home, is we really, really encourage them not to watch so much news.
Silver says it's important that those caring for others also take care of themselves by eating well, getting enough sleep, taking breaks, and getting help as needed. Newman says if someone needs immediate intervention, there are options most days from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m.
If you feel you need to go see someone face-to-face, we do have several options as well within our community. One of the areas is the University of Utah Neuropsychiatric Institute, or UNI, Park City, which is located on Sidewinder, right next to the IHC clinic. New this spring is IHC at the Round Valley Clinic now has a new counseling center. And part of that area, they have 6 slots every day for crisis walk-ins.
Several events to mark Mental Health Awareness Month include the Connect Summit County, which is sponsoring the Wednesday Lunchtime Learning on the 13th of May, that's next week. The Zoom location will be included in this report on kpcw.org. Communities That Care has Dr. Brad Reedy from Evoke Therapy Programs providing a free live webinar on navigating grief, loss, and anxiety from COVID-19. And you can find information on that on the Communities That Care website. And then the Park City School District begins the biweekly program beginning May 19th and ending May 29th on Tuesdays and Thursdays. This program is designed to help parents communicate with their teenagers. Well, good morning. It's 8:18. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, reports this morning show the U.S. unemployment rate is nearly 15%, with more than 20 million jobs lost in April. We've got Brooke Porter Cole with the Utah Workforce Services Department. She's on the line. She's got some details on just what the numbers look like coming from the Wasatch Back Summit in Wasatch Counties. Good morning, Brooke. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. How are you?
Just great. Thank you. So Utah's weekly unemployment insurance claims report would outline typically the number of unemployment insurance claims received in the previous week. And I guess that data would also include a week-over-week comparison with the total benefits that are being paid out, including that $600 weekly stimulus. And I presume you also have the top three industries that are providing the claims?
Correct. We do have all of that.
Yeah.
This past week for the entire state of Utah, we saw another encouraging drop in the number of new claims filed. Keep in mind that it was about 9,000, and the record previous high we'd ever seen was during the government shutdown in 2013, which was 5,000 in 1 week. So while we're seeing huge drops in the number of claims going in, it's still well above the previous record high. But it is very encouraging to see those numbers going down. And the most important thing and the thing that we are excited about is the amount of benefits that we're seeing going out, which means those record numbers of claims are getting processed, which is something that has been a struggle in a number of states with systems shutting down or some of these new government programs still not up and running from the CARES Act. So we're proud of the work that's being done in Utah. The combined benefits from state benefits and that $600 stimulus that you mentioned totaled $72 million going out just last week to Utahns. So it's definitely going out to the people that are really in need during these unprecedented times.
So how is unemployment insurance funded? Where is it like set up as a rainy day fund type of thing?
Yeah, that is a great question. And an important question. So what Utah has is called an Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. And that trust fund is funded by taxes that Utah's employers pay. And so for each employee, Utah employers pay a tax. And that tax replenishes the trust fund. And so these benefits are coming out of that trust fund. And then the $600 stimulus is coming from the federal government. And an encouraging thing right now when we're seeing record numbers of payments coming out of that trust fund is that Utah going into this had the seventh healthiest trust fund in the nation. So we're not concerned about that trust fund becoming insolvent. We're not concerned right now about having to take out a loan from the federal government. Right now, Utah is in a great place to meet this unprecedented demand on our trust fund and on unemployment insurance. And another important thing to note is that's why some of these federal programs were so important, like the pandemic unemployment assistance, because that opened up unemployment insurance to individuals who are self-employed. Self-employed individuals don't usually have the ability to access unemployment insurance because they don't have an employer who is paying into that trust fund. But this federal program is opening it up to individuals who are self-employed or gig economy workers like Uber drivers or Lyft.
Sure, and that is my question. So the $600 stimulus for the pandemic is in addition to what normal unemployment insurance payment would be, and how is that calculated? Is it based on earnings over some period of time, or is it across the board the same for every sector? How is that established?
Yeah, that's a great question. So what happens is when someone fills out an unemployment insurance claim, they submit their previous wage data and earnings, and they look at the last 5 quarters, and then they use that to calculate your weekly benefit amount. And that can be up to $580 per week. In 2019, before we saw this pandemic hit, the average benefit weekly amount was about $430. And keep in mind that unemployment insurance was never meant to be a wage replacement. It was meant to be a temporary assistance to help you bridge the gaps between employment. So just from job loss until you could find your next job. But recognizing that right now is a unique time and it can be difficult to job search, the federal government put in place that $600 stimulus to make unemployment closer to a full replacement wage just during the pandemic. So,
sure.
So yeah, up to $580 is what that benefit is.
Okay. So if a person is not out looking for a job because they know that there is no job to be had, will mm-hmm. they be eligible for unemployment insurance claim?
Yeah, that's an important question as well. So typically when you're on unemployment insurance, you're required to submit 4 earnest job seeking efforts. Meaning that you apply to 4 different jobs during the week so that you're continually looking for a new job. And that is still in place right now, with the caveat that the large majority, over 80% of individuals who are currently on unemployment insurance are what we call job attached, meaning that they have an employer who has said that they would like to bring that employee back as soon as business returns to normal. So that would be considered a furlough. It's a temporary separation from their employer. And in that instance, what we do is we consider that individual job attached, and that job search requirement is waived because we know that they have an employer who will be bringing them back. So most individuals right now are not job searching, but there are some that were unfortunately permanently laid off. And in that instance, they are still required to submit those job search requirements, but the Department of Workforce Services supplies a large number of job openings, and there is surprisingly a large number of jobs open and available. We have thousands on our website, and we connect them to those resources to make sure that they have the resources they need in order to fulfill that requirement.
Okay, and so with the stay-at-home orders being eased, and I believe the legislature just basically put through a condition that would indemnify any legal action against employers over COVID, over people, you know, contracting the COVID illness. What do people who are concerned about going back to their workplace do? Is there any consideration there from the standpoint of whether or not they're eligible for claims?
Yes, there absolutely is an option there because, like you said, if you receive a suitable job offer, meaning that it's returning to the hours that you are normally at or the wages that you are normally at, and it is the same job or same level of position, then you are required to report that job. And if you turn down that job, you do risk the possibility of becoming ineligible because at that point, you haven't lost your job due to no fault of your own. You have, in essence, potentially quit. So it's important that if that happens, if you're offered a suitable job, but you feel uncomfortable because maybe there's concerns that your employer isn't following the health guidelines, and so you feel at risk in that way, or you're considered a high-risk individual, or you are a caretaker for a high-risk individual, it's important that in your weekly claim you still report that you turned down that job. But then what we will do is then investigate that and look at both your side and the employer side. And if there are legitimate concerns, if you have documentation that you are high risk, that will be taken into consideration and you may still be eligible for benefits. But the important thing is to be honest and to report that, because employers also have the opportunity to report to us if an individual turns down their a job offer. And so it's important that you have reported that to us rather than the employer.
Okay. And one more clarifying piece. If you're not eligible for unemployment through Utah's workforce services, would you be eligible for the stimulus?
If you are not eligible for unemployment benefits, then unfortunately you would not be eligible for the $600 stimulus. That stimulus check is tied specifically to unemployment. But if you're eligible for just a dollar of unemployment insurance benefits, you would still be eligible for that stimulus.
Okay. And what segments of our business community, let's say in Wasatch and Summit County, would not be eligible? Are there particular segments?
At this point, there aren't necessarily particular segments that would be ineligible, because that pandemic unemployment assistance has now opened up as well. So now it includes the gig economy workers or the self-employed individuals. So it's pretty much across the board. So people just need to make sure that they go to jobs.utah.gov and apply. What would make people ineligible is if maybe they work two jobs and they lost one of them, but they're still making high enough wages at their other job. And so in that case, they would be ineligible because they aren't considered unemployed.
Mm-hmm. What about Park City, Summit County, Wasatch County, Heber City? Do you have any stats that break down those particular unemployment claims coming out of this area?
I do. What we've seen is that the claims data in Wasatch and Summit County have, for the most part, followed the same trends as the rest of the state. Last week in Wasatch County, we saw 127 claims filed, and Summit County was 229 claims filed. To kind of give you some perspective, the first week of the pandemic really impacting jobs, in Wasatch County, there were 386 claims filed, and in Summit County, there was 839. So throughout the course of the pandemic, Wasatch and Summit County have sat right around the top 7 to 10 counties in the state for unemployment insurance claims. But just like in the state overall, those have consistently begun to decrease over the last 4 weeks about. So that is encouraging to see those claims numbers going down. Another encouraging thing to see just in the state as a whole is that the number of people going off of unemployment insurance claims tripled in this last week. We've seen it pretty consistently, just about 1,000 people coming off of unemployment, but over this last week we saw about 3,000, and that was before the governor changed the status of our state to orange rather than red. And so I think in next week's report we're hoping that we see even more of those numbers and even more people coming off of unemployment, meaning that they're returning to work and the economy is beginning to pick back up.
Mm-hmm. We have a lot of service workers in Summit and Wasatch counties.
Mm-hmm.
Is that segment split out? I mean, can you see how that might compare with other segments of the economy? Say real estate?
I can't see the industry specific to Wasatch and Summit County, but what I did see is that initially we saw like food preparation and service related occupations right at the top. It was the number one industry for claims for the first 2 weeks of this pandemic. But then after that, we saw it drop down to 5 and then kind of stay there consistently in the fourth or fifth spot. And right now it's right about the fourth highest number of claims. So that industry has definitely been hit, but we did see it drop down a little bit from the first few weeks where it was the number one industry with claims, and a large percentage of the claims, not just at number one, but a large percentage of the claims. Yeah. And now industries are feeling it fairly evenly.
Well, and it's also in these particular Wasatch Back communities, there is, you know, basically a consistent cancellation of large events going, you know, starting with some really big ones that come to this part of Utah, you know, the 4th of mm-hmm. July parade and the tour of Utah and Swiss days in Midway. I mean, those would mm-hmm. probably very likely have an impact and a lasting impact on the service industry, I'm guessing, as we move into
the
summer.
I would follow your same train of thought there, and we are anxious to see what happens as we move into the summer and to see what happens with the virus, and if we can stay at this moderate risk level and hopefully lower as things are allowed to open, and watching what happens with events and the jobs that are attached to those.
Well, Brooke, thank you so much. I appreciate you giving us time this morning. That's about all the time we have. Do you have anything else you want to add that, you know, people might need to know?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is if you're still filing for unemployment insurance, if your job mm-hmm. hasn't been impacted but you're anticipating that, to make sure that you apply online and to apply accurately and completely. The biggest thing that will hold up your claim is if you submit something incorrectly. And so the best thing you can do to help yourself and us as we're processing in order to get it out to you, the benefits out to you as quickly as possible, is to do it accurately and completely. And if you are trying to get a hold of us, we understand that it can be difficult right now because of the high number of calls, but we have increased the number of people on chats if you want to try that. And your best chances of getting a hold of us is if you call us first thing in the morning. The phone lines are opening at 7, and that can get you in line to get on the phone as early as possible.
And could you give us those, give us that phone number and also your website once again?
Yes, and the phone number is listed right on jobs.utah.gov. And that is the best place to get a hold of us. If you click on the COVID-19 information page, that can take you straight to the application, and that's where you'll be able to get all the help you need and access our chat. And then it also has a phone number right there.
Okay. And how long of a turnaround time is it from the time that someone might submit an application and then actually receive a check?
Right now, it's about 21 to 30 days is the processing time. So they are getting out, but it does require a small amount of patience to get to that benefit.
Okay. Well, thank you again, Brooke Porter Cole with the Utah Workforce Services. Appreciate you coming on, and maybe we'll talk again soon to see how things are progressing.
Great. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye now. It is 8:36. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. And next on the phone, we have Park City High School junior Caroline Waldman. She is from the Park City High School National Honor Society, and she's got some details to share with us about the annual 5K Memorial Run. Thanks for joining us this morning, Caroline.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so every year this the National Honor Society, it seems like for decades maybe, has sponsored this high school memorial 5K race on Memorial Day, and it's been designed to commemorate members of our community who have passed away. And, of course, like so many other events this year due to COVID-19, you're having to make some adjustments. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
We definitely are. The 5K started in 2009 when we teamed up with the Park City Five. It started to honor the memories of five PCHS graduates who all died within 7 months of each other the year before. So this is definitely, you know, a big important event that we enjoy putting on. This year, obviously, it can't happen with social distancing. So instead, we are shifting to an online format. Essentially, we just want people to get outside or be active. You don't have to run a 5K over Memorial Day weekend. And then you can go to our website and make a post saying, you know, what activity you did, what your name is. And then if you want, you can post a picture and a story or a memory about the loved one that you lost. And so hopefully at the end, people will be able to scroll through and read instead of normally we put banners along the track with photos of the people that, you know, their family members want to be commemorated. So this year we had to switch it online, but we are excited. We're still working toward the same funding goals. So we help provide scholarships for outgoing seniors, and then we also donate to the Homeless Youth Center. And obviously this year we've had a harder time raising funds just because the 5K won't be as big. So we're asking for a suggested donation of $5 for everyone who posts on the website. It's a no-pressure thing, but we do want to be able to provide that same support. So our fundraising goal is $5,000 this year.
Oh, okay. Okay. And is $5,000 sort of what your typical goal would be, or have you dropped it down? Or
We have dropped it. Normally, we're able to raise, I think it's like $12,000 to $13,000, but that's mostly through things like sponsors, which have been, you know, harder this year because, you know, businesses are not operating the way that they normally can. But we do have a few lovely sponsors who are also highlighted on our website.
Okay.
Like Splendor, and I know Maine Content is also sponsoring us.
Okay. Now, how do people, how do they participate? Where online do they go? And is it just a thing that anybody who's a little savvy and maybe 20 or 30 years younger than me just knows how to do?
So we do have a website. It's parkcitynhs.weebly, so weebly.com. That's our overall website, and there's a little tab at the top right corner that says Memorial 5K. And then people can go there and they can see there's like the history of the event. There's a sign up. There's a little bar showing how far to our fundraising goal we've gotten. We do know the URL is a little bit long, so sorry about that. It's parkcitynhs.weebly.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But all of the information should be on there as well.
Sure, and we can include that on our website, also a link to that. So you're looking for a $5 donation, which is not very much. If you think about it, and is it just for the one day? I mean, is it just Monday that you could do this, or could people who want to start now participate? Can they go on and?
We're going to do it over the entire weekend, so the 22nd to the 25th. So anytime from that Friday, we figured it's easier than everybody having to do it in one day.
Okay. Great. What else should people know about it if they want to join?
I mean, if you you know, can't afford the donation or anything like that, like there's absolutely no pressure. Our ultimate goal is to provide some way for the community to still come together, which is what our usual event does. We want to continue that online. Also, if you feel particularly driven to donate more, we would also appreciate that. So it's really up to you guys.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so you're a junior and you'll be also participating in this next year, I presume?
Yeah. Next year I will be co-president with Lindsay Miller. We're very excited.
Okay. And hopefully we'll have a real race next year.
Oh, yes. We are hoping for that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. That's Park City High School junior Caroline Waldman with the National Honor Society talking about their virtual Memorial 5K. Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Have a good day.
You too. It is 8:42. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. And next on the line, we have Dr. Bert Lepanzri. He is the Associate Medical Director for Infectious Diseases and Medical Director for Microbiology at IHC. Thank you so much for coming on this morning. I know you've probably got a million things you've got going on right now with the COVID-19 antibody tests that are underway.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So an antibody test, it's a blood test, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
So, go on.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I was just going to say that antibody test is basically a test to determine whether or not your body has mounted a response to an infection.
And how often do we do antibody testing? Is this something that's happened recently?
So, no, antibody tests are something that we've been used diagnostically for many, many years, and it's a very important tool for us clinically especially in infections that don't have a good test to detect the infecting organism. So there's been extensive use of antibody tests throughout the years.
And reports with respect to COVID-19 symptoms kind of run a pretty wide spectrum with, you know, some people who show no symptoms but are still basically carrying the illness, and then others who are in the hospital fighting for their lives and on ventilators, that type of thing. And my understanding is with this COVID-19 pilot program that there are some criteria that you're using to decide who will be sampled. Can you talk a little bit about that and how it relates to just the uniqueness of the COVID-19 symptom descriptions?
Sure, absolutely. So you hit the nail on the head. This is a very unique situation, and COVID-19 is a very new to the world, and there's and we're learning something new about this particular viral infection as the days go by. The antibody tests that have been developed, these are new tools, so there's not been extensive information about how these tests work and how they perform. There have been numerous case series and case reports coming out of different parts of the world about the antibody response to this particular viral infection. So we're learning every day, but there are many uncertainties about antibody tests currently. So at Intermountain, as we roll these tests forward and make them available, we are being very cautious until we get a better understanding about the significance of these antibody test results. And in broad categories, we're guiding test use in four big categories. The first one is that we are recommending its use in patients who are admitted to the hospitals with severe respiratory tract infection and diagnostic uncertainty. So antibody tests should not be used to diagnose acute infection, but in some patients who have been admitted, they've had numerous COVID testing with molecular tests that have been negative. And in that circumstance, we're waiting until enough time has elapsed for the body to develop antibodies, and then we're recommending testing. So at the earliest, in somebody who has symptoms consistent with COVID, we are recommending to wait at least 10 days from the onset of symptoms. But the longer one can wait, the more likely the patient has seroconverted or developed antibodies. Okay. The second use case is patients and caregivers who had a respiratory tract infection that was undiagnosed and they've recovered. If they want to know, then the antibody tests are available for them. And then we're also using it for caregivers who have had high-risk exposures to infected patients.
Okay. Would that include medical workers or just a different category?
Correct. Medical workers, first responders, that demographic.
Okay. Okay. And then the third category?
Or that was the third. The exposure was the third category.
Oh, I see.
And yeah, so it's the diagnostic uncertainty, the recovered respiratory illness, the high risk exposures, and then the fourth one would be these large population based studies, which numerous groups are conducting at this time.
When you say numerous groups, you mean different antibody testing organizations?
So the CDC has been conducting antibody tests, seroprevalence studies. The University of Utah has several studies underway, and we're collaborating with folks in different populations looking at seroconversion in certain populations.
Okay, and are those selected population-based studies, or are they random? How does that work?
Yeah, so I'm not as familiar with the university studies other than what's been written about in the Salt Lake Tribune. But our group are looking at select caregivers who are taking care of COVID patients. And also there's an ongoing study looking at caregivers in Park City, Summit County.
Summit County. Okay. And as this disease progresses, we're, 8 weeks into having identified the first case in the U.S. You know, what is the overall highest rate of infection that you're seeing? I mean, at one point I was looking at charts of age ranges, and of course there's discussion that elderly people and people who have compromised immune systems are most at risk of having very bad outcomes from this illness. But I also remember seeing numbers that showed sort of middle-aged people being very high incidence of contracting the illness. Where is it sitting right now after this last couple of months of looking at data?
Yeah, so I think you pretty much described the distribution accurately. So the large proportion of cases, and I haven't looked at the public health website in the last few days, but last I looked, it seemed that the middle age demographic appears to have the highest percentage of infection. So we're talking about the 20 to 40 somethings.
And when you say highest infection rate, they're not necessarily very sick or highly symptomatic, but they just are showing?
Yeah, I those are mainly referring to percent positives.
Okay. Now, what about how this data compares with normal influenza? Would we, if we were to go out and test influenza patients, would those trends from antibody testing look similar to COVID? Or what is the what's the expectation there?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And, you know, I don't actually have a very good answer as to what we would expect for influenza. As you know, influenza is very seasonal, and every year we have to undergo vaccine because the immunity wanes in time. So, it's unclear as to how the COVID would match with influenza, and we're learning about COVID right now, and in the next several weeks, we should get more information about how the antibody response develops to COVID or to SARS-CoV-2.
Mm-hmm. So how long will the testing go on? How long will this antibody testing go on with IHC?
So at Intermountain, currently we are sending tests to ARUP, and we have now brought tests online in our labs, in one of our central labs. So we anticipate the need for antibody testing to extend well beyond this year. And it's unpredictable how long we're going to need this because of the widespread nature of infection and the unpredictable nature of this pandemic.
Yeah. And of course, there's discussion that light, warmth, this type of thing can kill the virus. And I presume that's also a theory with respect to seasonal flu, that the warmth, you know, changes the, basically it changes the contagion of that. Is that something that people can rely on? Do we know that the warmer weather will, you know, drop the incidences? Or is this just an unknown going forward still?
Yeah, that's something that that's an unknown to me. So I've heard about that. I've read about that. But, you know, I would say that in warm times, people don't crowd. The situations of overcrowding go down and people are out and about. And, I'm not aware of any particular study says that the warmth impacts the viral replication.
Okay. And let's talk a little bit about herd immunity and how that's related to the antibody testing, because so many of our public health officials here in Summit County and in Wasatch County have talked about, you know, keeping, contacts, groups of people to a minimum, 20 to 50 people, 50 people possibly being permitted, you know, later in the summer. But And that needs to stay in place until herd immunity, which is, what, 60 to 80% of people having had the virus or have the antibody?
Yeah, or has immunity, yes.
Immunity, okay.
Yeah.
And so What is the notion that building the herd immunity is related to actually having had the illness? Is that a correlation?
Well, certainly the numbers of people infected and who develop immunity play a role into development of herd immunity. But I think the concern about having people get infection to develop that herd immunity is not the best way to go about developing that herd immunity. I think if the virus is allowed to propagate and spread unmitigated, then the biggest concern is that it will make its way to the vulnerable population, and it will lead to increased numbers of admission and it would eventually exceed the surge capacity in our hospitals.
Okay, and so that's really the reason behind trying to control this illness is having the ability to respond to the people who go very bad, you know, very badly.
Correct.
In terms of their response to the illness. And is that still showing that, you know, it's the immune compromised, people who have other morbidity risks, and elderly people? That's still the demographic that the healthcare systems are most concerned with.
Correct. So the mortality rate in the population that you had just mentioned is highest, but that doesn't mean that other populations and otherwise healthy people don't get severe illness from this. So we are seeing numerous people without any underlying health illnesses or underlying medical conditions admitted with severe infection. So that's an important thing to keep in mind, is that even though the mortality rate is lower in the younger age group, the younger demographic, severe infections still occur fairly commonly. But
sure.
By far, most appear to have mild infection.
Okay. And do we know at this point how long a symptom-free person who did test positive and who remains symptom-free and they don't have the active virus, do we know how long it takes for those antibodies to form?
Yeah, so it's looking like the severity of illness is an important factor at how the robustness of antibody response. So people with mild symptom generally have a lower antibody response, and those with severe symptoms have more robust antibody response. And it's looking like with SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19 that antibody response or seroconversion occurs within 14 days. And based on different surveys, it looks like right around day 7 and 8, roughly 60% of people will develop antibody responses, and by day 14, of those, over 95% have manifested an antibody response.
Oh, okay. And as you're doing this testing, is this a blood test, basically? The
antibody? It is a blood test.
Okay. And so as you acquire data and information, will that be shared with the public, and will that somehow be dispensed through, through public, channels, that type of thing?
Yes. Yeah. So I'm certain that there will be many papers written about the antibody responses as these sero surveys and population-based studies get completed.
Okay. And if someone has antibodies now, how do you know? Do you know that they'll have them in 3 months, 6 months, a year?
No. That's a great question, and that's one of the major unknowns. How long does antibody response last? Do they wane in time, or is this something that's a long-lasting response? The other major uncertainty is whether or not the response denotes true immunity.
Okay. Boy, great topic. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Dr. Bert Laponzeri from IHC.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
It is 8:59, going on 9 o'clock here. You've been listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. It's 28 degrees in Park City. Sunshine is expected today, tomorrow, and mostly sunny on Sunday. Highs today should be 61. Tomorrow, Saturday, a high of 64 degrees. And then Sunday, Mother's Day, high of 71 degrees. Don't forget Mother's Day coming up on Sunday. Looks like we might have some thunderstorms coming in on Monday night possibly, and then Tuesday, mostly sunshine again, high of 65 on Tuesday, according to this report. We'll give you some Heber weather updates as well before we take you to NPR. It's 36 degrees in Heber, and they're also looking at sunshine through this weekend, a high of 70 today. Saturday, high of 72 in Heber, and Sunday, a high of 79 with sunshine, for the most part, partly sunny. Chance of thunderstorms Sunday night, Monday, thunderstorms, there is a chance there as well. High of 77, and Tuesday, partly sunny, mostly sunny, high of 73 degrees. Thank you for listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Carolyn Murray, sitting in for Leslie Thatcher. Have a great Mother's Day weekend. Thanks for listening.